This is how I experience life. It's like we're born and suddenly somewhere along the process we realize we exist. Like if you could remember way back when you were a little baby, you know. I remember some of my very earliest memories. I was really young. And I just remember like looking down at my body and like seeing my little dick and stuff and kind of, I remember one time in specific, I was laying on my back being diapered and I was looking through my legs and I was like using the V of my legs as a kind of, like they were moving back and forth and suddenly I realized, whoa, there's like something here on this side of that in the wall. You know, I didn't have words. I was probably a few months old and that there was like a world out there and a me in here, like because they were moving. I can't describe it. It was just somehow perspective, you know, somehow there was like a thing here and a thing there, and it hit me. I remember the moment very directly. And that's one of the earliest really clear memories I have. And then I remember from that time on, it's always a question of, am I going to survive or am I going to die? You know, am I going to win or am I going to lose? Am I getting what I want or am I not getting what I want? It's like, it all starts from that very initial sense that you're here, that there's something here, you know? And then later in my life, as I got involved in, you know, meditation, spiritual practices, and good drugs, I realized that there is nobody here, and that the rest of my life would be spent undoing the tension that made me feel like somebody was here, instead of just absolutely open, absolutely free of modification, you know? And so it became like from nothing, sense of self arose, and then there's a struggle to keep it there. Gotta make money, gotta eat, women gotta love me, you know, gotta succeed, gotta be victorious. And all the while, in my, you know, young adult life, I realized that that was all a sham, and that at some point, it was just all gonna dissolve right back in. And the whole fucking struggle was a total waste of time. And even though I knew that intellectually, and we all know that intellectually, we still do it. And we're involved in practices that serve that deeper dissolution and openness. Now, once you've had that experience of unity or of no separation, you know, of the ground of being, whatever word you want to use for it, and you felt yourself come out of it again, as a separate individuated thing. At that point on, if you dedicate yourself to spiritual practice, you have no more excuses for supporting your fears. Because it's all going to dissolve. And anything we could do for each other to serve our dissolution in love, I don't mean just decay, I mean, you know, the dissolution in the sense of opening in consciousness, relaxing this little tiny sense of self. Whatever we could do to serve each other helps that. Now what I feel is you've had that experience and you're just too fucking terrified to do anything about it. And we all are. First of all, I should say we're all too terrified or we wouldn't be here as a separate self. We'd be enlightened. Me too. So I'm not like judging you from a place of thinking I'm better than you. I'm speaking for all of us, including myself, that it's honorable to honor that terror in us and then lean a little into it, you know, just a little into the fire, all of us, like helping ourselves lean into the fire of the sacrificial fire, you know, serve that dissolution. But what's not honorable, in my prejudice, is for someone to have that experience, pull back entirely, and then still claim to be practicing a spiritual practice or practicing opening and opening and opening in love. Do you know what I'm saying? Now, I don't hear you doing that. I'm just kind of setting up a situation here for us to... Does anyone understand what I'm saying so far? Or not? Is it too abstract? Okay. So, what I feel that you're... Like, we were just talking with Jolly Roger, and Jolly Roger's way, style, of not leaning into the fire is to be easy on himself, and to be easy on his girlfriend, and to just tolerate things, and not be tyrannically devoted to love, as his father was tyrannically devoted to dictatorship. He was rejected the whole masculine side that would just be phoom, devoted to love, dedicated, disciplined to love. Well, We all have our style, and we've talked a lot about it for different people, of not leaning into the fire. We have our style of not dissolving. We have our style of selfing, small self. Your style is to be frozen in fear. It's just your style. I have my style, and we all have our own styles. And I don't want to support that style in you. If you want to do it, that's your business. But I want to provide a context where you have the opportunity not to do that old habit of being frozen in fear. You know, I've worked privately with you and Sparrowthorne on some of these things between the two of you. But in this group and in your life, if you don't take some risks, like serious risks, that would be risks toward service of enlightenment, either toward the world or even for yourself, then you're always going to stay buffered behind the safety thing. It's like a moat around your sense of self. You know, nothing will disturb you because you've taken no risks. There's no way you could be damaged. There's nothing to lose. You're not open. You're not allowing yourself to be vulnerable to death. Mm. You know, you're very safe. And any man in here who's been close to death knows that there is no better teacher. That death, once you face death, once you're close to death and stay conscious through the procedure, not just black out or something, it's hard to live a life of lackadaisical, everything's okay, just go to my job, I've got a nice car, I've got a good wife, just do this kind of trip. It's really hard to do that after you face death. You know, some people, I'm too young, but I had some good friends, I'm thinking of one in particular who was in the Vietnam War. You know, he was in combat and fought a lot, killed a lot, was threatened with his life a lot. And in the end, he got hit by a shell and he almost died, but he lived, and he's a friend of mine now. And that event changed his life. When he died, he basically almost died. He was laying on, he left his body and went up into another whole realm, then came back and his legs were almost blown off and was held back together. He can't live a normal life, and he knows a lot of veterans who just like live out in the jungle because they just can't live normal conventional lives, because once, day after day, you're at the edge of death, to come back and kind of like, may I help you, ma'am? You know, help some lady in a cash register or something, you know, is pretty meager. It's not the edge. It's not the heart. And many men live mediocre lives, and then they have to go out and find challenges. They go rock climbing just to experience death, or the near, not death, but, you know, to put themselves on the edge. Or they, like, I don't know, play the commodities market or something, you know, just to experience the possibility of financial death. You know, it's the edge, it's that challenge that brings it out. Sports, the observing sports, watching football games, watching boxing matches, watching sports, is a way of vicariously putting it on the line. You got these 300-pound guys rushing at you, you know, well, you're at the TV, you could be a big, fat old, you know, idiot, but there's some guy out there standing there, you know, with a little ball, or boxing, I mean, they're putting it on the line, they're totally challenged. And if you have a masculine sexual essence, that sense of challenge, that feeling of near death, the possibility of total loss, blooms you. You come out in the bigness of who you are when you're faced with that. So people seek that in very weird ways, from vicariously watching sports, you know, race car driving. I mean, what it's all about is the possibility of wiping out. When someone wipes out, they show that over and over and over and over, and it's on the news. Nobody shows just the good lap, you know. You're on the news, we have a good lap we're going to show you from the Indy 500 or something. No, they show like, here, so-and-so, but out of, you know, like does a triple bypass flip, and God, he walked out of there without a scratch. Isn't that amazing? Or whatever, you know, or he's dead, or we're sorry, we're talking to his widow here. You know, it's like, that's what people show. They want to see that near death. They want to know it's possible. If you took all the danger out of race car driving, like all of it, so it was impossible to crash, nobody would watch it or even race in it. I mean, yeah, you get bozos who just want to go around a track and it's, you know, it's the edge of it that makes it. It's the possibility of loss. Now, when you get more sensitive, you realize You're going to lose no matter what you do, in the sense that anything you build is going to dissolve. That's the law of the relative. What can be created is destroyed. Anything that's not eternal and unchanging changes all the time. So you cannot win. You cannot build something that's forever. It's going to dissolve. Period. I mean, there is no way around that. You are going to dissolve. One day, you are going to cease to exist. And if you could live with that face to face, you don't need to be in a race car going around the track. I mean, it still might be entertaining to you, but you don't need to be in a race car going at, you know, 200 miles an hour around the track. You don't need to play the commodities market to feel that edge. You don't need to rock climb. You don't need to watch the sports games. You might still do it because it's still enjoyable, but you're already at the edge of death. You're already feeling like you could die any moment. Any moment. And you will die in one moment. And that knowledge of death awakens you to the intensity that's living you. I mean, there's this immense universal process that is birthing you moment by moment. Like right now, you're just part of this immense process of consciousness that's just giving rise to you moment by moment, and you're honoring that by driving to your car, to your work, and doing your safe little thing, and taking your briefcase, and I mean, that's the epitome of consciousness. That's what our birth is about, you know, that's what the divine has taken human form, in your case, or anyone's case, to do. Maybe, but only you know. And the way you know is if you feel totally at your edge and totally full in your gift, so that in any moment if you were to die, you would die in the moment of fully giving your gift, because you're doing it very steadily, giving your gift. Or you know that you're being mediocre. You know that you're holding back, that you're lost, that you've lost your direction, that you've lost connection with your gift, that you're buffered yourself from fear so you don't really put out, that you're too lazy, that you're undisciplined, that you're... I mean, we have a billion reasons. And then as you get older, you have a billion more. You know, my body's given out, my mind isn't so sharp, I've got kids to take care of, I've got a family to deal. You know, it just gets more and more, and finally, we just die and get recycled. You know, we just come back and try it again. And so, you know, no one can prevent your destiny, but I could enjoy trying. I wouldn't want you to just live a kind of fearful, very narrow kind of life. And you might want to do that, because you're doing that. But you might just be doing that out of habit. You just maybe never have considered it deep enough. And maybe it's time for you to consider it and straighten things out. You know, like, live more impeccably. Like, what's the greatest way you could use tomorrow? The greatest way that you, with your karmas, your resources, your capacities, what's the greatest way you could use tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Imagine tomorrow was your last day on earth. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to die happy, and you wanted to die feeling like you had at least done something. Mm. What would you do? It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. If it wasn't terrifying, we would be enlightened right now. I mean, the other side of spiritual practice, see, that's a very advanced statement. You don't think it is, but it is. But beginning spiritual practitioners think they want to be enlightened. You could tell a beginning spiritual practitioner because they actually believe that they want to be enlightened. They think that they're choosing to go towards enlightenment. But an advanced spiritual practitioner, or someone who's more advanced, we should say, knows that they're avoiding enlightenment. They're choosing not to be enlightened. Because you want pussy. And I'm talking about big pussy. You want experience. You want the goods of individuated existence. And you realize that you are choosing ego over God. That is a more advanced form of spiritual practice. When instead of you going around all the time like, God, I'm doing everything I can to be enlightened. Yeah, I'm doing everything I can to be enlightened. You're going around going, I've done everything I could to be enlightened, and now I realize that I actually don't want to be enlightened at some level. There's a part of me, is a way of saying, there's a part of me, a fundamental part, that is afraid of that absolute surrender. Because it's annihilation. It's the loss of sense of separate self. And It's a terrifying thing to exist in that place until it's not terrifying. And there's no way around that. It's a terrifying thing. Otherwise, you would just... Everyone's had a bliss experience. Why not just stay there? Why don't you just give it up? Well, I can't just totally give it up. I want to make a little money. I got some obligations. I got to do this. I mean, there's a football game next week I really want to see. You know, it's like... And we're actually choosing particular forms of experience over transcendence of experience. And that's good that you feel that. But the practice then in that moment is to live, to lean in such a way into it that you're always burning up with that knowledge. It's like you're walking around knowing you're refusing enlightenment. It's a horrible feeling. And if you do that enough, if you don't allow yourself to just go, I'm afraid, and then like back way off, if you stay right at the edge, like you're walking around terrified, you're walking around knowing you're fucking up, you're choosing on enlightenment, that's good practice. That's tapas. Saints, some saints practice. If you ask them, like, what is your experience? They go, it's tapas, it's heat, you know, this is intense. Because they're right up at the edge, they know they're not choosing enlightenment, they know they're choosing unenlightenment, and it's killing them because they know enough of God to know that they are God. And then in the midst of that, to know that they're actually choosing less, it's a horrible tapas experience, and that's good practice, to stay right there, not to back way off, which is, you know, like, no, back off, take it easy, you know, wait 5-10 years, you know, whatever it is, to stay right at that place, moment to moment, and burn up in your own refusal of enlightenment is tapas. And that tapas, that heat, actually does burn up some scars. It burns up the fear. And eventually, and who knows when, it's, you know, it's a cosmic thing, you can't like force it, the moment will come when God is more obvious than the fear. But that's a great description of mature spiritual practice. Well, just become aware that you're doing those things and burn in it while you're doing them. Every cookie, know that this is postponing enlightenment or something. And how good does it taste? You know, like get into it. Let yourself oink in to the pig mud of our lives and know that you're oinking. Know that you're just snuckering in to avoidance of enlightenment. And that has its own practice. It puts a kind of reality in you that is tapas. It burns those tendencies up. You don't have to not do them. You simply have to be aware that you're full of shit. You know, you have to be aware that you're doing them to avoid bliss. If you feel guilt, realize that guilt itself is an avoidance of bliss. Well, if you're really doing it, something shifts for you, you know? I mean, if you're not just being guilty, if you're... It's not a matter of guilt at all. It's a matter of reality. It's kind of like, well, I'm tall and skinny. You know, well, I'm guilty, I'm tall and skinny. It's a whole addition to that. You know, I'm tall and skinny. That's it. You know, that's the way it is. I'm avoiding enlightenment. It's just the way it is. I'm actually choosing the experience of a separate self over unity. I'm choosing that. And when you know you're choosing that, it humbles you, and it also kills you. I mean, it's, you know that you're God and everything's God, and you don't want that. You'd rather have the picayune experience of the little worm enjoying its sense of separate self. And when you could feel that humorously and openly, but not avoid it, not back up, it creates heat. It's a tapas, and it actually burns away some of those seeds of karma or tendency that has led us to incarnate as a separate self whenever we brilliantly chose or spontaneously did that. That's a great comment. It's really a beautiful thing. I mean, everyone in here either thinks that they're seeking enlightenment or know that they're avoiding it, or they're enlightened. A man's defense against non-real purpose is financial success. Well, I'm serious. When men lose their true purpose and so forth, they orient onto something they could do. Financial success is a man's version of physical beauty in a woman. It's used the same way, too. Big wallet, women like them. Nice tits, men like her. Well, money actually is a good indicator of a man's purpose. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but it is. In other words, the world is a big woman, and your capacity to make money is your capacity to fuck that big woman. They're the same thing. make her happy, to make her juice, to get her wet, money. And it doesn't mean that you, if you have a purpose, you'll make money, because your purpose might have nothing to do with money, and you might go off into the desert and meditate and have no money at all, but be totally aligned with your purpose. But it means that if you want to make money, you can do it. If you want to make money, if you want to make money, a man's purpose is directly related to his capacity to make money. A man's purpose means your capacity to cut through obstructions and achieve your goal, whether it's enlightenment, money, whatever it is. It's like the woman's radiance. When a woman's open in God, she becomes radiant and beautiful physically, like we're talking about. Also, if she's not radiant, she could fake the physical beauty. Same thing with men. When men are filled with purpose naturally, they can make money if they want to. If they're not filled with purpose, then they have to strive to make money as a substitute for their purpose. And money is a way, just like a woman's radiance is a way of reading that. I mean, if my wife wasn't radiantly beautiful, I'd know she wasn't practicing. So, if I don't have the capacity to earn money if I want to, then I'm not practicing. Now, you can't earn it like that, because it takes time to make a woman come. You know, it takes time to make money come from the universe. But you could still take a direct route there. So if someone has trouble manifesting money, trouble, not a desire not to, unless that's an avoidance, then you do have weak Shiva, and she does deserve to doubt you. Just like if your woman is weak, is dull and tired all the time, it shows that she's not conducting life force through her body. If you don't have the amount of money that you want, it shows that you're not conducting life force through the world. I mean, all it takes to make money is a will. I mean, you just say, I want to make this much, what skills do I have? Okay, I could do these skills for this long and earn that money. Or I got to go back to school and learn these skills to work that long to make money. And then you just do it. It's because you waver. An obstruction comes up. You're afraid of failure. You're afraid of success. You don't put the energy into it. You don't cut the mustard in some way that you can't make money. You know, I mean, it's not that hard to make money, except to the extent that it's difficult for you to cut through obstructions, for anyone to cut through obstructions. Now, again, the other side of it is if you don't have a true purpose, if you're not connected to your heart, then you waver and you do money, financial success, as an artificial substitute for a true purpose. Just like you could be some run-down old bitch and you put on a lot of mascara and lipstick and dress nice to try to look good. It's a fake way of what you would look naturally if you were full of life force as a woman or full of consciousness and purpose as a man. So finances are actually a real good pulse on people's on a man's fullness in the world as a masculine action. But only you know if you're making the money you want to, the way you want to. I mean, it's up to you. You might be fine on $10 a day or $10 a month. I mean, you could go to India and live forever on probably what we make in a year. So it's not the absolute amount of money. It's your capacity to manifest. That's the measure. And so women will look to that, just like you'll look to her radiance as a measure. Why would you want to be with a woman who is dumpy and ugly and weak on energy and totally contracted and no life force, you know? Why would a woman want to be with a man who just can't go, well, I'm going to do this, and then winnow out every difficulty and focus and accomplish that? Every time you're ambiguous, like you start a project and you don't finish it, or you start a project and you don't carry through with it, or you show weakness with respect to money somehow, like you back out of something because you're afraid to take a stand, or you change your mind too often so you never feel pulled through ultimately or something. Every time you do that, you're weakening her trust in your integrity, and you yourself are wavering yourself. You know, it's one thing, again, to consciously do it. You could go, I'm going to do this, and then you consciously go, oh, this was a mistake, and consciously do this. But in every those moments, you're full, you're not weak, you're not struggling. They're choices you're making in freedom. Men tend to delude themselves. Sometimes they're just drifting. They think that they're making these conscious choices, but really they just don't have the balls to carry through with what they started with. So women are the good indicator of that, as usual. Look at how they're responding to your projects. If they're really happy at what you're doing, if they're full of energy and they trust you, then you're probably aligned with your purpose, whether or not you're actually getting an income at that moment. the world is feminine, and every man's relationship to the world is his relationship to the feminine, is his relationship to his woman. So it is precisely true that you have the same responsibilities with your wife that you do with the world, which means to enlighten them, you know, to bring them, if you assume this responsibility, to bring love into the world, to increase the consciousness of the world, to bring love into your wife, to increase the consciousness of your wife, to serve them into enlightenment. Well, different words, you know. And so I would say, one, you have precisely the same responsibility, and you will also have the same attitude toward the world and your wife. And the attitude that I'm hearing underneath it, which is a common attitude amongst all men, is, this is a hassle. Like, I not only have to kick the world's ass, hassle, 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 I have to kick my wife's ass, hassle, hassle, hassle. You know, and it's like, but that's not unique to you. You know, is that unique? Raise your hand if you've ever felt that. Okay, they're all raising their hands. So the essential masculine bad mood, as we've been saying, is feeling burdened by life, by women, by woman, by the big woman, by the little woman, by human women, by the universe. And the essential masculine practice, then, is realizing that until our consciousness is free in the domain of the relative as much as it's free in the domain of the absolute, then we're going to keep reincarnating here until we learn to love. You know, this place is about learning to be as free inward and outward, you know, both directions. And she is providing you with a human reflection of your capacity to do that, just like the world is giving you the worldly reflection of whether you're, as you said, kicking the world's ass, which again is all men could totally identify with. But if we change the metaphor and say what you're responsible for is fucking the world into God communion, is taking her and opening her into love, the world, through whatever means, sometimes perhaps kicking her ass, sometimes embracing her, sometimes kissing her, sometimes coddling her, sometimes yelling at her, you know, the whole range. And you would apply the same thing to the woman that you're living with, so that you would change your disposition from one of someone who is burdened by life and women and didn't want to be burdened by it to someone who is taking the responsibility of bringing love into that, to become a lover in those instances. So that's one side of it. I know that's not your direct question, but one side of it is the shift. It's like, you know, a spiritual master, perhaps, some spiritual master. It's like, instead of going like, damn, I got to enlighten another country, Jesus! You know, it's like... He takes the disposition, any master would take the disposition of bringing love into these places, not being burdened by it. You know, if you're masculine, there'll always be the feeling of being burdened, but if you respond to the burden by, you know, like, as opposed to, you know, by opening it, that's the difference essentially between an ordinary man and an extraordinary man. The difference between your response to the perception of a burden. Whether it's simply, which all men feel, anyone with a masculine, all women feel that when they're in their masculine, like, oh, my God, what a burden, life, you know, so forth. But men in particular feel that. And women, oh, my God, what a burden, you know, more stuff to deal with and all of that. So just becoming whole in masculinity means taking responsibility for creating love and enlightenment in the world and in your woman, in everyone, actually. I mean, just taking that as your attitude, that's what you're born for. To transform your body, her body, all bodies into love, into enlightenment. And that's a shift, a fundamental shift from just feeling the constraint that all men feel, that all masculine people feel. Now, the other part of it is that if you're doing that with her, say, so you're coming home, you're totally present with her, you're totally loving her, you know, totally present, finished business, just absolutely full, you know, you're bodily loving her, and then she might still be, I don't feel it, I don't feel it. You know, she might still have her inability to open in love. You could persist and you could persist and you could do everything you can do in that. However, her responsibility is love. Her responsibility is opening in love. that which is radiant. When she's loving, she's radiant. They're the same. So her responsibility is never to just be in the mood of you don't love me or I'm not loved. See, the feminine version of the bad mood of the man, the bad mood of the masculine is constraint and burdenment by the world and by women. The feminine version of that bad mood is, am I loved? No, I'm not loved. He doesn't love me. I'm not lovable. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. I'm not good enough. Maybe I am good enough, but he doesn't think I'm good enough. It's the whole question of love, the doubt of love, doubt that she's loved enough, doubt that she's loved right, doubt that maybe another man could love her more, or maybe you could love her more if you only went to this workshop or something, you know?